Came back from Italy. I've been home for one day, and I came here. And I didn't have to punch any buttons over there. So I'm a little bit out of my element. Thank you for being here this afternoon. I appreciate so much folks who will get out on a rainy Sunday afternoon. Those who are members here, I appreciate you being here. I appreciate your understanding of the importance of what this congregation is doing, and you're part of it, and you wanted to do your part and be here and support this, and I appreciate that. And for those of you who are visiting here on a rainy Sunday afternoon, a special salute for you for coming out and being here and being an encouragement. I tell you, coming back to Bowling Green is is a very special thing for me, a very emotional thing for me to see so many folks who've been really such an intimate part of my life. And especially, were such an intimate part of my life in the first years of my adult life, as Jeannie and I were just married, just beginning to have our family, and just getting established into the work of preaching. We took the full plunge when we moved to Bowling Green and began working with the 12th Street Church in 1980. Last Sunday, I was with Johnny Berdini and his wife Pina, and Stefano Carrazza and his wife Antonella. They don't live in the same place, but we were all together for the first time in a very long time. And we were together for a very specific reason. We had come together so we could spend some time talking about sort of where we were in life, where we were in the work of the Lord, and what we were going to do as we were looking toward this final lap, however many years we get in the last quarter of the game, just reflecting on life. And I told them, I said, as strange as it may sound, I have known you all and worked together with you all, with Stefano and Johnny, longer than with any other Christians that I know. But a year later, when I got out of Florida College, is when I moved to Bowling Green, and I met so many of you, and began working and worshiping together with you. And it's been a remarkable thing to me to look back in my life and to see all the different threads of relationships that God has woven together in my life so that it has worked out in the way that it has, and that my part in the kingdom has been what it has been. I think as I look out this afternoon, I think about how when Jeannie and I first came to Bowling Green, we didn't have any children yet. Well, we had one on the way. Well, Christy had not yet been born. And the folks here just kind of took us in and helped raise us and made a difference in our lives. At the time, I can assure you, we did not even realize the kinds of differences you were making, the ways you were influencing us. It's only as we've been older, as our kids have grown up and they've had kids, that we have begun to understand in just a little way what all of that really meant and how it all works together in the grand and eternal scheme of things. And it has been especially helpful to me to reflect back on my relationships with so many of you and how each of you played a part in helping me grow up. And you don't have to feel responsible for what's happened, but I mean, you did help. And it has caused me to be reminded of the fact And so many of the things that we think are important in life are not really the things that are important. And so many of the people in life that we may not be paying much attention to may be the very things that are making a difference. But I want to tell you, in all sincerity, you all have made a difference in my life. And I thank you for that. And I appreciate the Southside Church for the kind invitation to come back to Bowling Green and to be here and to share in these studies this week. Well, I would like to reminisce for a long time, but we've got more important things to talk about. Thinking about how Jesus sees me. Well, one of the reasons I was thinking about that as we were starting is because I was thinking about how you all see me. And when you've known somebody for a long time, when I see my son, I see him as Ryan, about that high, still with all of the mischievous looks on his face and all of the energy that he bounded around. That's what I see. I think he's 35. I really don't know. But I think he is about 35 years old. And I don't see him the way you see him. I see him as my little boy. I am persuaded that when Jesus looks at me, Jesus doesn't see me the way others see me. In Matthew, the 9th chapter, beginning in verse 35, the text says, Jesus went about all the cities and the villages, teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom and healing all manner of disease and all manner of sickness. But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion for them because they were distressed and scattered as sheep not having a shepherd. Wow. I would just remind you this afternoon, first century Judaism was not pretty in many respects. You could say of the Jews of the first century that to a great extent they were a mess. And they had been a mess for a long time. And God had been working with them, and God had for centuries raised up prophets to send to them. He had called them back. He had punished them. He had spanked them. He had sent them to captivity. He brought them back from captivity. He had waited on them. He had initiated judgment on them. And they were still a mess. You might think that when Jesus finally came into this world, as he came to the house of Israel, to the children of Abraham, to the very people that should have been the most prepared to revere him as the Son of God, the long-awaited Messiah, the King of Kings, and the Lord of Lords, you might have expected them to be the very ones of all the people on the earth who are going to bow down and kiss his feet and honor him. And instead, they are the ones who, for the most part, in mass and in multitude, gathered themselves together and chanted and jeered and demanded of Pilate that he crucify him. They rejected him. And yet, how do you suppose Jesus saw that? You might think, well, when Jesus walked on the earth and he saw this mess of humanity, the ones who were in many respects without excuse, because they had been entrusted with the oracles of God, that covenant that had been given through Moses, and yet they had made nothing of it. You might have expected him to be burning, I mean burning, with righteous indignation as he saw these people in all of their confusion and their hypocrisy. You might imagine that Jesus would have reacted to them with a spirit of indifference and disdain, like, hey, I've been working with you guys for some 1,500, 2,000 years since the days of Abraham, and you still don't get it? Go on. I'll find somebody with some intelligence who can figure out who I am and acknowledge it. Well, that wasn't his attitude either. When Jesus saw this multitude, the text says, he was moved with compassion for them because they were scattered as sheep, not having a shepherd. And I'm saying to you this afternoon, Jesus doesn't see folks the way we see them. And sometime before you pillow your head tonight in sleep, why don't you bow your knee for just a moment and thank God for that? That Jesus doesn't see you like others see you. There are just three or four things I want to say to you about that this afternoon as we think about Jesus and the delight that He is for us. First of all, I want to remind you this afternoon, Jesus sees not just what other people see. He does see that. But that's the very superficial level. Jesus sees not only my behavior, He sees my behavior, but Jesus sees not only my behavior, He also sees my needs. I mean by that, Jesus sees how I'm acting, yes. He sees what I do or what I did, yes. But I want to tell you something. The truth of the matter is, sometimes my behavior is less than who I really am. Sometimes my behavior is less than who I really aspire to be. Sometimes my behavior is other than what I normally would exhibit. Did your kids ever understand that there were moments in life when they just needed to keep their distance? I suspect so. I suspect all children know that there are times when mom and dad are semi-unapproachable. That is to say, don't go in unless this is a life or death situation, and you better be sure it's pretty much death. Sometimes my behavior is a reflection of my physical feelings at the moment. Sometimes I am tired. I mean, really, really tired. And men have a tendency, sorry about this gender thing, men have a tendency when they are really tired to revert back to childhood. I don't know why we're like that. Only the women laugh. But it's okay. It is true that that happens often. And we whine. And we complain. And we're fussy. And nothing suits us. And we're in that mode where you would just expect a mother to come in, and as she was chiding us for our childish behavior, would say to us, well, David, bless your little heart. Because sometimes my behavior is less than who I really profess to be. Now, that's true in the physical realm. I'm kind of like that at home sometimes. When Jeannie asks, what are you doing? Nothing. Wrong answer. Could you get up? Oh, Jeannie, I'm so tired. Yeah. The truth is, I don't want to get up and do it, but why do we sometimes behave in silly ways? When we do that in the worldly, domestic, mundane realm, it looks foolish. It looks childish. When we do that spiritually, it's another thing. And I must tell you that there are times spiritually when I am tired. Have you ever, spiritually, have you ever had a battle that you were fighting, a spiritual battle that you were fighting, and you fought it over and over and over again, a temptation that kept raising its ugly head, and you beat it back down, and it raised up again, and you beat it back down, and it raised up, and you were just weary of fighting? And there comes a time in life, if we are not careful, we give in to a behavior and a response that is less than who we really are. And I'm saying to you that today I am thankful that the God who gave His Son to die for me understands and sees that there is more to my life than simply my behavior. He sees not just my behavior, He also sees the needs that are behind my behavior. When a little child is fussy and fretting and crying and whining, it is true that that is disturbing and that is childish behavior, but there are some needs perhaps behind that. A hunger or a wet diaper that needs to be done or something, and that a parent will understand, and God spiritually understands that there are times in our life when we have needs that are behind the behavior that is being exhibited. Do you remember in John the third chapter, there was a man by the name of Nicodemus who came to the Lord by night. He came to the Lord by night, and we may think, well, what kind of expression of faith is that? And what kind of salute to Jesus is that? And here's a guy, seemingly is part of the Sanhedrin. Here's a guy who wants to check out this Jesus guy, and he wants to get closer to the Lord. He wants to engage with the Lord, but he doesn't want anybody to know about it. And you might expect that Jesus is just going to say to him, "Hey, big boy, you're an important guy. You hold a big position among people. How is it you're having to sneak in the back door at nighttime so nobody will see you just so you can talk to me? Why don't you get out of here and come back when you're not ashamed to stand up and tell people?" That's not the way Jesus reacted to him. It is true that Nicodemus came to him by night. Jesus saw that, and Jesus understood why he was coming by night, because he feared the people. But thank God, Jesus saw past that. And he saw something that was even more than that. He saw the potential that was in that man's heart and in that man's life, and he reached out to him. The next time we read about Nicodemus is in John the 7th chapter. And the Jews are at that point ready to pounce on Jesus because the people are all praising him. Hey, he was amazing. His teaching was something. We never heard anybody preach like that. You want to get a bunch of preachers stirred up, you say something like that. Boy, we never heard a preacher preach like that. Well, Nicodemus spoke up. He said, "Hey, doesn't the law say that you don't judge a man until you've given him a chance to speak, until you've heard the facts? Let him speak for himself. Isn't that what the law says? Let's give the guy a chance." You see, first, he's sneaking in the back door, coming to Jesus by night, doesn't want anybody to know. Now, he's speaking out a little bit. When you find him in the 19th chapter of John's Gospel, you're going to find him with Joseph of Arimathea. And Jesus has been crucified and is dead, and it is clear where the Jews are going with this game. not only with Jesus, but with those who are followers of His. And Nicodemus is found to be with Joseph of Arimathea, bringing spices for the burial of the Lord. Wow. I am so thankful. I am so thankful that Jesus gave Nicodemus the opportunity to hear the gospel, to reflect on the gospel, to grow in the words of truth, and to come to an understanding of righteousness. I want to tell you, Jesus, when He looks at me, He sees not only my past, He sees also my potential. You know what's humbling about coming back to Bowling Green? Everybody knows my past. And that is humbling. It is one thing to go somewhere where people haven't known you. And you can go in and you can let the guy get up and introduce you. And if you wrote out your introduction really well, he'll say great things about you. And you will just be somebody and very impressive. But for people that know, they know. One of the great blessings in life is to be surrounded by friends who will not allow you to take yourself too seriously. The blessing of having friends who will just tell you, you know, David, you're in reality, you're old and fat and bald, but it happens to all of us. Having friends who will say to you the truth about what's going on. People who can laugh with you about yourself. And people who will help you see yourself as you really are. Jesus, when He looks at me, He sees my past. But He also knows my potential. And I want to tell you something. Were that not the case, if all Jesus knew about us was our past, we wouldn't have much of a future. If He couldn't see the potential that is there in spite of our past, and what are you getting at? I'm getting at Romans 3, where the Apostle Paul said, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Jesus well understands that there are sins and transgressions and failures and disappointments along the way. He well understands that. He also understands that that does not have to define your future. He understands that. Do you remember in John the 4th chapter when He comes to the well in Samaria, the woman comes to draw water. The disciples went into the city to buy food. They're hungry. Jesus stays. We find out immediately that this is not just happenstance, that Jesus stayed at the well and they went into the city to buy food. Something is going to happen here. This woman comes, she starts to draw the water, and Jesus engages this woman in conversation. That in itself was something really unusual. A Jewish man did not engage a Jewish woman in conversation in public, a woman that was not his wife. Could you draw me some water? And the woman said, how is it that you, being a Jew, you're asking me, a Samaritan woman, to draw you some water? What's going on here? Jesus said, well, if you knew who it was that was asking you for the water, you would ask of me to drink of the living fountain. Well, that sounds pretty good. So they engage in some conversation here, and Jesus said, hey, I'll tell you what you do. Go into the city and call your husband and tell him to come. And the woman said, hey, I don't have a husband. And do you remember what Jesus said? You got that right, sister. You don't have a husband. You have been married 5 times and the man that you're with right now is not your husband. And then she says, the obvious, sir, I perceive that you're a prophet. Never met her. She had never seen this man, had no idea who he was. He engages her in conversation, and suddenly he knows everything about her past. Wow. It is true, he did. He also knew about her future. And he knew about her heart. When God told us to go into the world and sow the seed of the gospel, finding honest and good hearts. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to find those honest and good hearts sometimes in the middle of Samaria at a well. And it may just be a woman who's been married 5 times and is presently living with a man who's not her husband. And she was the one. The disciples went into the city and they came back to Jesus. All, as far as I know, as far as the text tells us, all they brought out of the city was some groceries. The woman went into the city and she tells everybody, come with me and meet this man. He told me everything about my life. Could this be the Messiah? The whole city comes out with her. Jesus has these 12 trainees who are trying to specialize in bringing people to Jesus. They just failed a test. They went into the city and all they saw were groceries to eat. She went into the city, she didn't even think about lunch. All she could think about was, could this be the Messiah? Come, let's see. Come see for yourself. I am so glad that in my life, when I have, spiritually speaking, hit the dirt face first, I am so glad that Jesus could see not only my past, what has happened, but that He could also see my potential. And that He could say to me, as He said to that Samaritan woman, to the woman caught in the act of adultery in John chapter 8, go and sin no more. Or as He said to Peter, after Peter has been with Him during the years of the ministry, and Peter on that betrayal night is saying to the Lord, who is it, Lord? Who is it? And then Jesus, after Judas has left to go and do his thing, Jesus begins to be troubled and begins to talk to the disciples. And he's saying to them, look, the Son of Man is going to be taken away. The shepherd is going to be smitten and all of you like sheep are going to be scattered. And Peter speaks up and he said, not me, Lord. Not me. The rest of these guys, they may abandon you, not me. He threw all the rest of them under the bus. I'll be there with you. They may run away, not me, Lord. And Jesus said to him, you don't even know what you're saying, Peter. Tonight before the rooster crows twice, you will have denied me 3 times. And Peter got angry and he spoke to the Lord vehemently. And he said, if I have to die for you, I will not deny you. And that night, that same night, standing around the fire, being questioned and questioned a second time and questioned a third time by a little handmaid who recognized his accent because he was a country boy from Galilee, she said, for sure You're one of his. You talk just like a Galilean. And Peter has been caught and he begins cursing and swearing. I don't even know the guy. And the rooster crows and Jesus turns and looks at Peter. And you might just think that would be it. That would be the ultimate. How could Jesus ever? Let me tell you something in John chapter 21. One of the last things John tells us in his gospel. The disciples were out fishing. Jesus is out there walking and they're saying, hey, what is this? And Peter's the one who said, it's the Lord. He calls out to them. Have you got anything? No. Throw your nets over on the other side. And they did, and the nets began to break. They're so full of fish. And Peter said, it's the Lord. It's the Lord. And Peter throws his cloak off. He jumps in, going for him. He gets to the shore. Jesus had prepared something to eat. He pulls Peter to the side. He said, Peter, do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Feed my sheep. Peter, do you love me? Well, yes, Lord. You know I love you. Tend my lamb. Peter, do you love me? And Peter was grieved that the Lord asked him the third time, do you love me? Three times Peter denied him. Three times Jesus is hearing Peter confess him. I love you. And Jesus said, feed my sheep. Aren't you glad that the Son of God who died on Calvary can see not only our past, but he can see our potential as well? Jesus can see not only what I deserve, he can also see what he's wanting to give me. I don't know how many times I've heard someone say when talking about this principle of forgiveness, forgiveness is actually harder with the people that you love the most. And it's harder with the people that you love the most because the people that you love the most are the ones who hurt you the most deeply. And so in conversation over and over again and trying to help someone overcome this unforgiving attitude and talking about what needs to be done about attitudes and feelings that need to be let go, about things that need to be given to the Lord, about the need to press forward, to move on. Someone inevitably rises up and says, well, I want to tell you something, David. He just doesn't deserve it. He doesn't deserve it. True. Maybe it's true. Let me ask you something. When you stand before God in judgment, are you going to be standing before God and begging Him in that moment, Lord, all I am asking you for is to look at my life and just give me what I deserve? Not me. I will tell you in a heartbeat, I don't want what I deserve. Mercy. Mercy is not getting what I deserve. That's mercy for me. Grace That's getting what I could never deserve. And I'm telling you tonight, when I stand before the Lord, I'm standing before a God who wants to give me grace. That which I do not deserve. You remember when the prodigal came back to his father? He said, "Father, I've sinned against heaven and in thy sight. I'm not even worthy to be called your son." What did he say? He's saying, "I don't deserve to be your son." That's right. But his father was hearing none of that. His father was calling for the ring to be put on his finger, for the sandals to be put on his feet, for the robe to be put on his shoulders. He was calling for the fatted calf to be killed, for the musicians to play, for the party to begin. His son was dead and is alive. His son was lost and is found. This is a time to celebrate. The father was focused on what he wanted to give. And I'm saying to you this evening, Jesus, when he looks at me with grace, is looking not only in view of what I deserve. That's what the cross was all about. That's what I deserved. He didn't ignore it. He dealt with it. He dealt with it so that rather than giving me what I deserve, he took what I deserve. He dealt with it so he could give me grace. And finally, let me say to you, I am thankful to God that when Jesus looks at me, he sees not only what other people see, he also knows my heart. He knows my heart. I'll tell you the truth, folks. People have looked at my life at times and have misread things. And people have looked at your life and have misinterpreted things. And people have said, "Well, I don't know about that. I don't know what you intended. I don't know what you were trying to do. I don't know what you thought you said. But I can tell you this." Well, let me tell you something. When Jesus looks at me, he saw everything you saw. And he knew everything that you knew at that moment. But Jesus saw something that you didn't see. He saw my heart. "Well, I think when you said that, you had anger in your heart. You had jealousy in your heart. I think when you said that, you had bitterness." No, I didn't. God knows. I'm going to tell you something, folks. Sometimes when we bow our heads in prayer at night, that's the only solace we find. God knows. He knows. Jesus, over and over again, indicated that he looked not only on the behavior of people, he looked on their hearts. On their hearts. We can be so judgmental at times, not even trying. We can be so unfair and our estimation of others at times, without even trying. In part because we only know part of the story. In part because we are limited in perspective. But I'm saying to you tonight that one of the greatest blessings of life is that regardless of how anybody else sees me, God sees my heart. The complete picture, not to excuse or to dismiss the outward things that others have seen. The Bible is very clear about responsibility that goes with that. But I'm saying to you that just because we have defined a behavior or an outward act does not mean that we have seen the whole picture here. And sometimes perhaps, the one man in the Bible that the Holy Spirit refers to as the man after God's own heart, sometimes his behavior is less than who he is. The Apostle Paul said in Romans chapter 1, I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. It is the power of God unto salvation to all who believe. And the Jews, are they, yeah, if you need to be saved, the gospel is good. The Gentiles refused to have God in their knowledge, and God gave them up to their own reprobate mind to do those things which are not fitting. Amen. Preach on, Brother Paul. The Jews were chanting. Those Gentiles, they need a Savior. They need the gospel, the power unto salvation. Yeah, in chapter 2, Paul said, and you, brother Jew, you also need a Savior. Because having the law, you didn't keep the law. They sinned outside of the law. You sinned under the law. Romans chapter 3, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Life is short. We don't have a lot of time to waste trying to impress people who do not deserve to be impressed. Pursuing after things that don't matter anyway. We don't have time for that. And life is not complicated with all these 1,001 things that are important and make a difference. What is it God requires of a man? But to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with God. You want to know what it's all about? To love the Lord your God with all of your heart, soul, strength, and mind, and to love your neighbor as yourself. Hang it up on those two things, Jesus said. That's it. If you could get that down, you'd be a long way down the road being the person that God's called you to be. When God sees me, I'm thankful that, yes, He sees all of my behavior, and He also sees my heart. And in spite of my behavior, He reaches out to me, and He says, will you come? Will you come? God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son. Will you come? Yes, but, you know, in my life, you just don't understand. God understands. You just don't know what I've done. God knows everything you've done. God is the one who says, will you come? Yes, but all of these sins. Yes, but will you bring your heart to God? Because I'm telling you right now, that's what God is reaching for. If you'll give Him your heart, He'll take your life. He'll wash you clean. He'll make you His own. If you're here this evening, not a Christian, come in obedience to the gospel. If you're a child of God who needs to come home, won't you come while we stand here?